This is the Sunshine Economy on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. It is pledge time here on WLRN, and we're presenting a special Sunshine Economy today. We call it Movers and Shakers, featuring some of the region's top industry leaders talking about their businesses, our economy, our community. Among the biggest issues that hits everyone, from where they work to their own families, is health care. Insurance premiums, deductibles, co-pays, all have continued a ceaseless march higher in recent years, yet most of us still have really no idea how much a doctor's visit or a trip to the emergency room really costs. Back in May here on the Sunshine Economy, we sat down with two top hospital CEOs, Brian Keeley of Baptist Health South Florida and Mount Sinai Medical Center CEO Steve Sonnenreich.
I don't believe that there is anywhere that's more important going forward than price transparency. The real story about price transparency is as it relates to employer-paid health care. And without transparency, what we've seen is a rising cost of health care to insurers passed on to employers in the form of employee contributions and the cost of insurance premiums.
Will you see more transparency on the part of Mount Sinai and the providers you work with?
Well, at Mount Sinai, we believe very strongly about price transparency, and we'd be willing to put our prices to all the insurance companies out in public, and we would welcome that kind of transparency from everybody in the marketplace.
Brian, would you do the same thing for Baptist?
We welcome transparency. We've always been strong advocates of transparency, but when you look at the Affordable Care Act, this is a transition from fee-for-service medicine to value-based purchasing. In value, like you buy a car, you're looking at the cost and you're looking at the quality. So I think it's important to be transparent, not only with the quality outcomes and the patient satisfaction information, but also the pricing. The problem with the pricing, it is so convoluted and it's so confusing to most people because the vast majority of people, you know, the way we are reimbursed by both Medicare, Medicaid, and commercial insurance companies has very little to do with pricing. It's all pre-negotiated rates based many times on an aggregate number per a stay for a diagnosis or per day.
And Steve, to your point of view, would you be the first in the area to put up Mount Sinai's prices for the public to consume?
We would welcome that opportunity because we consider ourselves to be the highest quality and also the most efficient in the marketplace. I believe that price transparency is going to become more of an issue in 2014, because we're going to continue to see the rising cost of health insurance impact employers, employee contributions, larger deductibles, larger co-payments, and the public is going to scream out for pricing transparency.
What role can you play as a chief executive of Mount Sinai to push forward for this transparency that you're calling for? And are you willing to take that first step locally?
Absolutely. And we're willing to challenge all the others in the marketplace to put the prices that they charge to Blue Cross and United and Aetna and all the other insurers in the marketplace, because I believe Mount Sinai is well recognized as a high quality institution. And if we're able to operate at prices that others in the marketplace are priced 30-40% higher than we are, then we challenge everybody to get to that level where there could be affordable health care in this community.
Brian, you mentioned some of the qualitative issues that you'd like as well with pricing, but are you willing to take that step and provide the pricing with the qualitative responses?
I think
responses?
That's where the whole industry is going, undoubtedly.
Why aren't we there yet?
Because it's so confusing now. I think when you look at Medicare pays us on a DRG basis.
What's a DRG basis?
A DRG is a diagnostic code. It's for a single procedure. They have one number for a single procedure. The other federal government, Medicaid, pays us on a per-day basis, not broken down by individual charges, on a per-day basis. Commercial insurance pays us on a DRG, per diem, case rates, discount off charges. It is a mess. If we could aggregate all the information and have one payment methodology, that would simplify it for the normal consumer. But consumers get so confused out there when you have it all broken down into little pieces like that using different payment methodology.
I keep coming back to this. You talk about offering to be transparent. Guys, what's to stop either of you two to take that first step, to be the first in South Florida to post the prices up online in an area where it's transparent for everybody to see, your competitors, but also your consumers?
Steve, Tom, we started pricing our urgent care centers, and you go in the door, all the prices are listed there. But we took another great step just a couple months ago. We have package pricing, so it's one single price for the urgent care visit. That's a huge step in terms of going in this right direction. But it's just a beginning step. We have a long way to go, because when you look at the Charge Master, there's probably 80,000 different charges in there. So there's a, you know, it's a very complex issue that we're discussing.
Steve?
Tom, this is not about Medicare or Medicaid. Yes, Medicare and Medicaid are challenged in this country, but there is a fixed price, as Brian mentioned, a DRG price. This is really about the affordability of health insurance to working people. The largest component of the uninsured population are working uninsured, and it's about having affordable prices to the insurance companies. And so you've incentivized us at Mount Sinai this morning. We will post our prices relative to Blue Cross and Aetna, our contractual prices, and we'll challenge Baptist and the other systems in the community to do the same. This is about one item, specifically what the contractual rates are between our institutions and the various insurance companies. If we could get down to the Mount Sinai price, healthcare will be much more affordable in this community than it is currently.
Son and Righteous Pledge there made on the Sunshine Economy here on WLRN was big. You've got a major medical center CEO promising to make public the prices it charges insurance companies to treat customers of those insurance companies. Now, I spoke with Sonnenreich again as recently as late last week, and he repeated his commitment to price transparency, saying he's as committed as ever to transparency. He also says that his group is doing a lot of legal research and has continued to do that research since making that pledge back in May here on the Sunshine Economy. He also told me, quote, they're completing their due diligence as quickly as possible, end quote. We'll stay on that case for the pledge of Steve Sonnenreich and Mount Sinai Medical Center to make public the insurance rates for medical procedures here in the Sunshine Economy in South Florida. You can join that conversation at WLRN on Twitter. Use the hashtag Sunshine Economy. Let us know what you think your real price of health care is. So you heard that promise first right here on WLRN, here on the Sunshine Economy. It was front page news in the Miami Herald 2 days later. It made national news later that same week, and its coverage of this kind of important pocketbook issues that your contribution helps support here on WLRN. This is a pledge special edition of the Sunshine Economy here on WLRN, movers and shakers in South Florida. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening. Storm season has been very quiet. Running the risk of jinxing that by simply mentioning it, I know, but it's been very, very quiet, thankfully. But there's still been plenty of activity and plenty of noise for Citizens Insurance policyholders throughout the state of Florida. The state-backed insurance carrier is on pace now to have fewer than 1 million policies sometime next year. That would be the first time it's happened since 2005 in the very busy storm season that year brought. Citizens has notified hundreds of thousands of customers this past several months that they will be covered by another company unless they decide to stay with Citizens. Barry Gilway is the CEO of Citizens Property Insurance, and we spoke to him back in June just as the storm season began.
Number one, Floridians have to realize that this marketplace is changing dramatically. If you take a look at the Florida market 9 years ago, then 22% was covered by Florida-only companies, yeah. Florida domestic. At that point in time, Citizens was about 15% of the market. The Florida domestics, they were 22% of the market. Today, entering this storm season, Florida domestics are 51% of the total marketplace.
Now, let's be clear about what that means, Barry. That means that companies who are based in Florida, who solely underwrite Florida property insurance, are solely in Florida. Their only exposure is in Florida. They're not geographically dispersed.
That is why the reinsurance element is so absolutely critical.
As you've gone through this depopulation effort, a lot of Citizens property owners and have been opening up their envelopes over the past several months and seeing that they have the ability to opt out of Citizens, but yet don't necessarily have premium information or creditworthiness information about this new company that could underwrite their property insurance. How do you solve that problem?
The reason I was such a huge proponent of the clearinghouse legislation, I think that was a huge win. And the reason that's a huge win, because it fundamentally solves the issue that you're referring to. The bottom line is we will have, and the target date here is January 1st of 2014, And the clearinghouse will provide any quotations from any interested company relative to that particular risk in the marketplace.
And are you seeing Citizens distort the market as much as it has in years past?
The PLA, or the personal lines account for Citizens, which is the non-wind, non-coastal business,
right?
We're very close to rate adequacy on that business.
What about that wind insurance? What about that coastal customer in terms of this environment?
When you start talking coastal, we're well away from rate adequacy. We're close to 30 to 45%, depending upon territory, deficiency relative to what we actually should be charging on that business.
So in other words, those folks with wind coverage on the coast, have coastal coverage from Citizens, are paying roughly 50% of what you think a free market would charge them to take on that financial risk to cover their property.
I would say that's pretty darn close. I would say they're paying, you know, maybe they're paying 50 to 60%, Tom, but they're not paying any more than that.
And the rest
of what the actual cost of that insurance should be.
If private market won't accept that financial risk, why should other state taxpayers accept that financial risk?
You know, you asked the $64,000 question, but keep in mind also, Tom, that if you take a Cat 5 hurricane, you know, coming through Miami and Lauderdale at current values, then you're talking about $100 billion risk.
That's Barry Gilway, the CEO of Citizens Property Insurance here on the Sunshine Economy. As the storm season began back in June, think of that multi-hundred billion dollar risk to the local economy. Certainly, you may not be a Citizens policy holder, but if you are a Florida resident, you would be on the hook should a big storm hit in the wrong place. That was Barry Gilway, CEO of Citizens Property Insurance, speaking to us here on the Sunshine Economy here on WLRN. Last year, Citizens had 25% of the market in the state of Florida, 1.5 million policyholders. Earlier this year, they moved to depopulate by 400,000 policies. And in fact, just last week, they announced another effort to take 200,000 Citizen policyholders and move them to the private market. This is a significant economic issue throughout the entire state of Florida, but of particular interest here in the Sunshine Economy in South Florida, as we remain the highest cost and the highest risk place in the United States to insure for the kind of insurance that many of us need to have to become homeowners here in our economy. This is what we do on the Sunshine Economy each and every Monday. We connect you with the movers and shakers. It's one of the roles that we can do here on WLRN and makes it such a special place. This is the Sunshine Economy on WLRN, Movers and Shakers. It's a pledge special. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening. So if you want to think of an area's economic future, just look at its education systems today. More of Florida's public school kids are being exposed to Common Core goals this year. But there's no clear measurement, though, of the effectiveness. Governor Rick Scott just last week said he's considering using an executive order to address this testing controversy. We heard about this testing trouble from Broward County School Superintendent Robert Runcie and Miami-Dade Superintendent Alberto Carvalho when we spoke with both of them just as school began in August.
I think that's a challenge that the state is facing, and it's not a challenge that's unique to Florida. I think the state of Florida has recognized that, number one, our readiness as a state for full implementation of computer-based testing to address Common Core is not there. The necessary ratio of computers to students who would be assessed is not what it should be. Their recommendation is one computer for every three students. Secondly, I would have to say my personal opinion. We should never be in a position of procuring and buying digital devices, computers, laptops, for the purpose of testing. If we're going to buy technology, it's for the purpose of supplementing instruction and supporting effective classroom environments. Secondly, I think there is a degree of disagreement, and I understand it, over what that assessment should be, who produces it, its validity, its reliability, and whether or not it has been field tested sufficiently. I do not believe that the state has met all the criteria to, in fact, be able to launch that type of assessment. Florida initially has subscribed to PARC, and I don't think Florida now is in a position, in fact, to embrace PARC because of the reasons that I just described.
And PARC was one of the tests that a bunch of states were working on together that would be the Common Core test that many of the states in the consortium would have theoretically used, so you could compare tests from, say, Florida to New York or somewhere else.
Correct. I mean, this would be, I mean, the concept of a uniform set of standards, not curriculum, standards, that then states, and there's a big distinction between standards and curriculums.
That's an interesting point. Sorry to interrupt, Superintendent, but we've used Common Core curriculum and we've used the phrase Common Core standards.
Right.
Curriculum, in my mind, and I both my parents were public school teachers, curriculum is the coursework. It's the textbook you see. It's the lesson plans.
And it's even the way you teach it.
That's right. A standard is saying this is the goal that we want the students to be able to reach.
Exactly.
Comprehension,
right.
or whatever that may be.
And you've just debunked sort of the myth around and the confusion around Common Core standards.
No, and I was, you know, the way I kind of look at it is the standards say, look, these are what the expectations are in terms of the skills our students need. The curriculum is about how you get there. Mm-hmm. Common Core is not about dictating how you get there. It's just setting the goals.
Superintendent Runcie, what is your best explanation for what Common Core is in the classroom for a parent sending their children off to school today?
What I would say is that Common Core gives us a great opportunity to shift away from teaching our students how to memorize content and facts. Information is a commodity today. You can go on the internet and search and get whatever you want. Common Core gives us an opportunity to focus on the mastery of skill sets. What are those skill sets? The ability to analyze information, being able to think critically about it, and solve problems.
Superintendent Alberto Carvalho of Miami-Dade County Public Schools, Robert Runcie heads up the Broward County Public Schools as superintendent with us here on the Sunshine Economy. We're talking about Common Core standards. We're talking about measuring those standards and our Public Insight Network, connection of teachers and parents and other stakeholders in the community of public education, also have these same kinds of questions.
Hi, my name is Denise Stewart, and I'm a concerned parent. And I have two questions. The first question I'd like to ask is, what is this new test going to look like? And the second question I'd like to ask is, what type of formula will be used to compile the data scores and the school performance grade?
Superintendents, we've already described to some degree a lot of the questions that still remain about what this test looks like. And we've talked a lot about the procedures to get to that test, but it does get down to we're implementing these the Common Core in classrooms without an agreement yet on measuring that standard. Is that fair to say, Superintendent?
It is fair to say, and actually this year, and we ought to be honest about this, well, this past year the state has abysmally failed on its responsibility to ensure validity and reliability associated with the state accountability system. I've been a very strong voice against the insanity that we've seen with 39 different changes to the accountability system over 36 months, sometimes the goalposts being changed in the third quarter, well after the school year had started, without prior warning to teachers, to parents, to principals. Here's what we know about what the assessment will be, regardless of what exactly that assessment will be called or who will produce it. It will be, at least at some point, computer-based. Secondly, we know that we'll rely less on multiple-choice questions. We'll rely more on open-ended questions that require critical thinking and explanation of process. It will rely also less on theoretical questions. We'll rely more on practical situations for which the student will have to navigate and demonstrate how he or she arrived at those solutions. Regarding the second question that that I heard from the caller, that's a very legitimate question. I have at this point no faith that the state of Florida has the systems in place or the willingness to ensure a truly valid, reliable, transparent, honest way of depicting student achievement progress or being able to report adequately what that progress is. And at a time when student outcomes that are being measured are being used not only towards graduation of children and promotion, but also teacher evaluation and performance pay and ultimately their employment. I submit to you that I think we ought to be very careful about not making mistakes. And I think the state has rushed to simply getting it done rather than ensuring that it gets it done right.
So Superintendent Carvalho of Miami-Dade Public Schools, no confident in the public assessment of schools, which parents rely on and teachers rely on, obviously, and administrators rely on and regulators rely on. How about from Fort Lauderdale, Superintendent Runcie, any confidence in the state's ability to essentially grade the effectiveness of your employees that are headed back in the classroom today?
I agree with my colleague, Superintendent Carvalho. I have limited confidence in the state's ability to get there. What I see now is that we live in a very disconnected world where we're moving and advancing in the Common Core arena, but we have an accountability framework in this state that's anchored in FCAT, and that is a legacy system. It cannot appropriately be used to define where our students are in terms of developing and mastering the skills that we know they need to succeed in the 21st century. So that dichotomy needs to be resolved and some rational outcome needs to happen. And the impact on this, especially as we look forward towards how schools are actually graded, that teachers' compensation, their entire livelihood is based on this. This is a very, very serious matter, and these issues need to be resolved in short order.
You heard about that testing controversy between Common Core goals and the current testing curricula that is in place in the state of Florida. On the first day of school, August 19th, that was the Sunshine Economy with the leaders of two of the biggest school districts in America, two among the biggest school districts, Alberto Carvalho, the superintendent of Miami-Dade County Public Schools, and Robert Runcie, superintendent of Broward County Public Schools. That was several weeks ago, as we mentioned, the first day of school, talking about the testing controversy. And just last week, we heard a bit of a response from Governor Scott here in Florida, saying that he is considering using an executive order to try to address this testing controversy. Also last week, you heard on WLRN News that the Miami-Dade County Republican Party Executive Committee voted against the Common Core standards. And you can follow all of this on our State Impact website and our education coverage here on WLRN. It is really this exclusive kinds of conversations that we can bring to you here on the Sunshine Economy each and every Monday on WLRN, as we call this our pledge special, Sunshine Economy, Movers and Shakers in South Florida. The superintendent spoke to a lot of folks that first day of school, but it was only here on WLRN where we were able to have both of them, two of the top superintendents in the United States, right here in the Sunshine Economy, speaking exclusively to WLRN in regards to the testing controversy, which impacts not only school grades, it also impacts teacher pay and teacher evaluation, a significant impact here on the local education business, the local education systems, and feeds directly in to the kind of economy that we're building for ourselves in the future here in South Florida. And it's that kind of exclusive coverage that you get Mondays here on the Sunshine Economy. This is the Sunshine Economy, a pledge special here on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. You know, the kind of economic coverage we have here every Monday on the Sunshine Economy isn't all about profit and loss. It's not all about dollars and cents. It's also about having a little bit of fun. And several people help get this program together each and every week. And one of those is the mind behind the music.
I am Ed Kalehoff, composer.
I asked you to help me out with this radio program on WLRN. And I said, I need to have some music. A number of people, when they see me now, they say, "Hey, Tom." They start humming the theme that you wrote for Sunshine Economy, which is the point of composing the kind of music that you compose, isn't it?
Yes. We go for a piece of music. A composition that, first of all, captures the spirit and the personality of show that we're doing. So I wanted to get something that was modern and was establishing itself as a indication that you were a modern man and capable of the world of business and finance, which is all of that wrapped up.
Ed, I've got to ask you, how does it feel when you hear themes that you've got a big hand in? I mean, again, instantly, you know exactly what you're going to be watching when you hear this theme. The guy from Westchester in Miami, come on down.
Tell them what they want, Johnny.
I recorded that first in 1972 in London at the then famous Pye Studios. It did a lot of the Beatles recordings and a lot of the hits out of the Brit invasion. Theme was done monophonic, which is one speaker, mm-hmm. not stereo, which is two speakers. And Mark Goodson would never let me re-record it or remix it in stereo. He said, no, it'll change it. So when Drew Carey took over, when Bob Barker retired, Drew Carey said, oh, man, we got to at least join the Neanderthal age. Let's go with stereo. So, of course, at that time, nothing could play the old masters.
So you had to re-record it?
We had to re-record the one you just played. In the infinite wisdom of the Hollywood producers, they said, oh, Carol Hoff's too expensive. Because I said, look, I'll do it, but I got to pay the guys.
You always insist on using real musicians.
Well, that's the only way. Well, they tried to go with some synthesizer guys. And, of course, it came back as a complete disaster. So they came back to me and they said, okay.
Finally, Ed, there's one more I've got to ask you about.
Ah, the old famous ka-chung.
From A Current Affair.
Yeah, that was years ago with a very good friend of mine.
Ed, how did that ka-chung come about?
It was a paper cutter.
Is there literally a paper cutter that you put in front of a microphone?
One of those big things that you used to keep your fingers out of in school, you know, when you could cut a bunch of sheets of paper, you know. And there's also a golf swing in there, you know, with, you know, that.
Really, you identify as a musical composer, and rightfully so.
I'm old enough to have been trained classically. And been trained when I went to the music school in Philadelphia. They said, why do you want to go here? Man, you're a rocker. You're a jazzer. You're from the South. I want to know what a bassoon does and a harp and a violin and a viola. I want to know how to write for them.
Well, in true Sunshine Economy fashion, Ed Kalehoff, composer, sailor, snowbird in South Florida. We were on Ed's boat in Dania Beach in the harbor. Using modern technology with just an iPod, Ed played 40 tracks for me.
And oh my
gosh. I heard this one. I said, that's the one. That's the Sunshine Economy. That's the modern, dynamic, innovative economy that we've got here in South Florida. I can share the composer of The Price is Right, Monday Night Football theme, and right here in the Sunshine Economy on WLRN. Ed Kalehoff, a friend of the program and a friend of WLRN. Ed is a guy who's a top-notch composer, session musician, works with musicians and studios across the globe, and has done a number of the pieces of music that so many of us identify with modern media, including this one. Certainly rings true this Monday here on the Sunshine Economy. Ed helped recompose Monday Night Football theme back just a few years ago. And when I worked with Ed for the Sunshine Economy theme, I got to say he volunteered his time and his musical capabilities and his composing capabilities for us because he believes in public radio and believes in what we're trying to do here on WLRN and the Sunshine Economy.